friends, and welcome to Hashtag Music Ed Love. I'm your hostess, Angela Ammerman, and I'm so excited to welcome oboist, podcaster, performer, author, and mama, Meredith Height Estevez, onto the show. Welcome, Meredith.
Hi, Angela. How are you?
I'm so good. It's so good to see you. Meredith and I actually went to college together like ages ago at CCM. And so I don't think we've actually set eyes on each other in real life since then. So we'll just have to schedule a catch up at some point.
But let's not say how many years ago that was, because that might date us.
Yes, please. We'll keep that to ourselves. But before we jump in, Meredith, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? And what is your life like right now?
Sure. Hi. Thanks again for having me. I currently live in Metro Detroit, Michigan, and I live here with my family, my husband, Edwin Estevez, and my children, Eva and Eli. Eva is 5 and Eli is 2. So we were chatting before we got on about the sleep deprivation being a real thing. So I'm primarily an oboist. That's like the first thing that is usually in my bio, because that's what all my degrees are in, oboe. And I love performing. I still play all around. I love freelancing. I'm in the, what they call the Freeway Philharmonic here in Michigan. So I play in lots of regional orchestras and really enjoy that life of popping in and out of different performance spaces. And I also have a really multifaceted life as an artist as well. I'm a writer, and I'm working on finalizing my first book, which is being traditionally published next year, which I know we're going to talk more about today. And so, yeah, my days are filled with lots of music and editing and preparing to get this book to the world. And the book is really written for creatives who are experiencing creative block and burnout and creative wounding. And that is a big part of my work, is to creatively coach musicians and authors and visual artists and really any art form, folks who are struggling with their creative life and feeling burnt out and lost. So that's a little bit about my life right now. It's pretty crazy with these children and all these things going on, but it's also really joyful. So
yeah, I've been amazed at all the work you've been able to do. And one of my favorite things about following you on social media is actually that sometimes you post like a schedule, like the morning schedule, what you've been doing. And I find that really motivating and inspiring, actually, because I just see all of these incredible things, and your productivity, your work ethic it's contagious, actually, when we see you doing that stuff. And then you see what's happening. It's really exciting to be able to watch that and to be inspired by that. But in all of that, in all of the subsets and all of the things, I am just blown away by all that you're doing. And I would love to know, like, how are you balancing it? Do you have a specific schedule for each day, what you're dedicating to your different endeavors, or does it look completely different for you?
Well, when I read that you were going to ask me that question, I thought, like, how do I do this? Am I actually accomplishing everything? I think the first thing that feels important to say is that I have a lot of help with my children, especially my husband and a whole line of babysitters. I have a list of childcare people in my notes app on my phone who like come in a pinch, including my mother-in-law, who comes out to Michigan from New Jersey a lot to help us. And so I don't do it alone, and I don't do everything either, right? And so I know I've been getting better at saying no. But one thing I will say about productivity is that this is in the book. So this, if you want to learn more about it, you can buy the book. But I talk about manager versus maker energy. And this one software engineer coder, Paul Graham, wrote this article. I think it was like in the 80s. I mean, it's been a really long time ago. He wrote this thought that we have sort of our managerial mind, where we're like writing emails and taking care of tasks. And that is like, everything fits into sort of like a 1-hour slot, and like we can manage like exactly what we do and when we do it. And then there's maker energy, which is a much more nebulous gray area. Like sometimes, and Paul Graham says, sometimes one meeting in the middle of a day where you're supposed to be making can blow your whole creative output. So like your maker time really has to be large chunks of time that are not planned, because you need the freedom to explore and, you know, come into a long practice session slowly without having a deadline. And so I will say that about my schedule. I produce a weekly podcast called Artists for Joy. And the podcast is really central to my work with artists and how I communicate with my reader. And so it's a big labor of love. It's where I can combine my love of music with words. And so the days, the podcast goes live on Friday. And so Thursdays are really my maker day, my podcast day, where I try, I don't do any coaching. I don't do any gigging if I can help it. And it's really important for me to like be able to get in the zone creatively. And to sort of think of things like that and not blame myself when I spend 3 hours writing emails and then I don't feel like practicing or I don't feel like writing. Like it's a whole different energy. It's hard to transition. So I hope that helps.
No, that's really helpful. And I think as teachers, we have something similar that happens to so many of us. And, having that chunk of time can be so hard to find. And I don't know that I've ever heard it explained that like there are two different kinds of energies, the managerial versus the maker, but I find that really helpful actually for myself personally, because sometimes I'm trying to like write an arrangement for my students and I just cannot get in the right mindset. And I have this whole to-do list of things that I desperately want to get done. And so maybe it's that like my managerial mind is constantly kind of taking over there. So that's really—
Yeah, well, totally. And you need like an on-ramp and an exit ramp, and I talk about that in the book, that there's things you can do to work with yourself. Cause like, it's not as much as we would love to like go to an island and like just create all day. Like we have lives to lead and we have businesses to run and students to teach and things to do. And so there are ways you can sort of hack your mind and make it a little bit easier to go from one to the other. When I was teaching, I've held a couple of different positions at universities. And I found that the amount of emails and even though I love the one-on-one, applied music teaching, which that's what I was doing when I left Juilliard, I found that to be so energy zapping in a way. I mean, it's different. It's creative. Teaching is really creative. Finding the right metaphors and really trying to get to the root of what's going on and like listening creatively to a student playing. But yeah, it sucks your energy in a way that, playing oboe and writing music or writing words, they can be taxing too, but it's a just different kind of taxing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I definitely find that like different types of teaching, I react differently to those as well. Like if I'm in a small group or teaching a private lesson versus teaching a huge group of students, that also I find has a different kind of energy required. And I think one-on-one for me is the most intensive as well, just because you're so focused on this one person and it's, yeah, it's a totally different thing.
Well, and don't you love, I remember seeing you teach in undergrad and like watching you come alive. It was like the classroom was your stage, you know what I mean? And I, when I've taught like music theory in classes where I have like 15, 20 kids in the classroom, I feel the same way. I get so much energy from teaching and being in front of crowds and, working with larger groups of students. And so I think it's important to always manage your energy more than you manage your time, because time is finite. Like you can't create more, but things that will make energy grow or diminish.
That is so helpful. I was just writing that down because I love that. Manage your energy more than you manage your time. And I think that that's super helpful to just kind of think through that. Well, I know you mentioned a little bit about studying at Juilliard, and I would love to delve into that a little bit. What, after CCM, you went on to do all of these really cool things, and it's been just amazing to follow you. What was the experience like at Juilliard, and how did that actually shape who you are and what you're doing now?
Yeah, it was integral to the person that I am today, and not for necessarily good reasons. It was a really difficult place. And not everyone has that experience. And so I just want to name that some people, it has a reputation of being cutthroat, competitive. And it wasn't so much that it was cutthroat and competitive. It was just, it wasn't a nurturing educational environment. And it was real, we were required to do so much more than that was even possible for us, just in terms of mental health and capacity level. And so I think I just, I got to the point, I got to the end of my doctorate degree, and I write about this in the book as well. I got a standing there with my diploma, smiling for my dad's camera phone. And I was like, how am I going to do this for the rest of my life when I don't even like music anymore? I wasn't sure. I didn't even enjoy listening to music or going to concerts. I mean, it was like, it was ruined for me. And I don't totally blame Juilliard. I think that when you are an excessively driven person, and I think this is important for educators to know, because you all have a student like this, you know, the kid who is like, just got it in their bones that they're going to do this and they're going to go to conservatory. And I think that when you do that for so long without feeding the lake, you know, without filling the well with joy and remembering that our identity and our worthiness is not tied up in our performance and how all the accolades we get, like when we don't teach students how to cope with rejection or failure or things not going well, and we'll wind up burnt out and just chasing the next thing and end up with, you know, an eating disorder or a mental health disorder. And that's really where I ended up. And it took a while to kind of find my way back. And it was really through a book called The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, which is, the subtitle is A Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity, where I got to explore the connection between my faith, my spiritual life with my creative life. And even though I was a lifelong person of faith, it never occurred to me that those two things were related. because creativity, especially music, had just been this way for me to perform and to achieve and to be somebody and to get out of my small town in South Carolina. So I worked with the Artist's Way, and I started hosting Artist's Way groups in person and then on Zoom during the pandemic. And it was really, the book is really about me returning to myself and finding joy again for music, and, you know, finding joy after Juilliard in a way. And it is possible. And I love spreading the message that, you know, the future of the arts rests on the well-being of artists. And so as educators, that is a really important thing to remember, that we need not only equip students with the ability to know their key signatures and to sight read rhythms, but to pursue the arts for the purpose of having a better life and to using creativity to know themselves better and to practice self-care and to let it be a restorative, joyful practice instead of another way to earn your worth.
Wow. I've been watching all of your like information and listening about The Artist's Way. So I actually need to read the book now. It sounds like it'd be something really helpful for teachers as well, actually. And so much of what you were saying reminds me of, like, as our students are graduating and going to audition for schools, you know, we are like their school teachers and their private teachers are often their number one like mentor as they're making that decision for where they're going to go to school, whether it's primarily undergrad. But do you have advice for someone that has that excessively driven kid that's similar, a similar personality to yours, as they're getting ready to kind of make that big decision of their undergrad studies, to find a situation that's going to kind of nourish all of that for them?
It's really hard, because I am aware of the reality that because I went to Juilliard, there's a certain amount of doors that are open to me that wouldn't be opened if I didn't go there. And so I enjoy the benefits of getting to have that on my resume. Okay. And so I feel like it's important to say that, because I don't want to in one ear like say that it was a bad experience and then be like, oh yeah, like let me brag about how I got to do this. And so I think it is true that there are great music educators and institutes of higher education in the arts that do open doors for you that will change your life forever in ways that are good. But I think what's important, and so I'm not saying like, don't tell your students to go to Juilliard or don't tell your students to go to that high intense conservatory. What's more important, I think, is reminding students that they have you as a mentor and that they have the resources they need to function no matter what happens. And because here's the thing, they could encounter a toxic teacher or have experienced intense rejection anywhere. I mean, it could have been Juilliard, but it could have been a much smaller stage that's equally traumatizing, right? We have to equip them with resilience, skills for resilience, remind them of the mental health resources that are there, coaches and things that are available within the university and with, you know, at home with people that they trust. And so I think that's more important. That's something we can control, is helping students access the resources that are already there and remembering that they're not alone.
That's so helpful. And something that I know as teachers, like one thing I'm always encouraging is to continue on as a mentor as the students progress through college, especially as music majors and music minors. So that's super helpful. Well, I know a lot of this is in your new book. So you are an author and you have this book coming out, and I just have this really great feeling about this book that it's going to be huge. And I cannot wait to read it myself. So tell us about, how did you end up deciding to write a book? And tell us a little bit about the book so that we can all be just like waiting for that to come out and buy it as soon as it hits the shelf.
Sure. Yeah. So my mother was my elementary school librarian growing up. And so reading and writing have always been part of my life. And I don't know about you, but because I was told by someone, I don't even know who, that like, if you're going to do music, you have to do music and there's no looking back and that's all you can be. And actually when I was at CCM, I like was one or two classes shy of having a minor in creative writing. But again, nobody encouraged me to do that because it wasn't, we were all supposed to be practicing and we were, but every chance I got in undergrad to take classes in the English department, I did. And so it's a bit, been something on my bucket list for a long time. And I really wanted, when the pandemic happened is when I started the podcast. I had a little more time when I was teaching full-time in a university at that time, but the paths were cleared in a way where I could devote more time to the podcast. I bought a microphone, and that's when I started the weekly publishing of some of my writings. And I knew that being a driven person, that I wanted to try to get traditionally published. I wanted to get paid to write the book. I wanted to have partners and editors and agents. And so I worked really, you know, worked for a solid 3 years on that. And that's a whole nother podcast about that journey. But I got a literary agent and he helped me pitch my book. And we actually had a couple offers from different publishers for so the very first dollar I ever made from a piece of my writing was a book deal, which is crazy. And so the book is called The Artist's Joy, A Guide to Getting Unstuck, Embracing Imperfection, and Loving Your Creative Life.
Well, that is so exciting. I cannot wait to see it come out. I've seen the pictures for the book, so I feel like I have a little bit of an inside scoop on what's coming out. And I know that that's just going to impact so many people in such a positive way and bring about so much more joy. So that's really, really wonderful. Well, okay. The last question I have for you is about parenting and creating in the cracks, because you have started to publish more and more on this idea of creating in the cracks on your podcast and on your social media pages. And it spoke to me so much because I feel like I never have that like deep time that I used to have before having a child. And that's been a really big challenge for me. And I'm constantly trying to find people who are doing it and how are they doing it? And, you know, how are they finding kind of that sense of balance and happiness in all of it? And so I would love to know, what is creating in the cracks? How do you get in the zone quickly when you have a short period of time to do it? And what do you recommend for those of us that's our time?
Yeah. Well, for one thing I forgot to say at the beginning was that I am a Suzuki parent as well. My daughter is playing Suzuki cello, and we have been taking lessons together for 2 years. And so I mentioned that in the beginning of this conversation because I think the biggest shift for me has come in seeing my whole life as an opportunity to experience creative joy. And the lessons and practice sessions with my daughter, Eva, who, you know, sometimes they end in tears. Like, it's not all great. I mean, you know how it is, like working with a five-year-old trying to hold the bow, like it's a lot. But when I get to watch her come alive with music and with curiosity and experimenting with the sounds and with that feeling of pride when she can do it. It reminds me of myself when I was younger and what I used to love about music. And we were creating in the cracks all our lives. we were. And it's something that I think we need to, when we reconnect with our inner artist child, the kid we were, the things we loved when we were kids, we can remember that it's possible now as an adult, if we have practice finding the path back to who we were. And so that's sort of the overarching vibe of what I try to do. I try to be playful around it. Like the maker energy for me has to feel, it has to be about possibility and playfulness and flexibility. And so, and sometimes moving from like solving a major problem that is very managerial to the playful maker energy, that can be, it can feel like a little whiplash. But when I know what I'm striving for, I know that what I want to feel is already within me. It's just a matter of being intentional about accessing it. That makes a big difference. But when rubber hits the road, here's what it looks like for me right now, because that's another thing. It's, you're in a season of life, right? And we all know children, they grow and they change. We were talking about sleep deprivation. Like it, you know, I wrote most of my book from like 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. Okay. Could I do that now? No, because now my child's not sleeping through the night again. Right. And so the cracks that you find, 2 hours is a, like that would be a delight. Right. And we don't always get 2 hours. But 30 minutes, like how, what can you do in 30 minutes? So stop believing the lie that, you know, oh, if I don't have an hour, then it's not worth it. That is not true, because there's a little piece of it. And I know it's frustrating to have to jump in and jump out. It's not always fun, to have to dial out right when you get into the zone. But, thinking of creativity as playful, but also as an act of devotion, that there's no number of minutes that are ever going to be enough. And so if you just tap in, not through discipline, yes, it does take discipline, but through this reverence of devotion and like, oh, I wonder what we're going to encounter here. So yeah, I mean, that doesn't really answer your question, but, finding the cracks in your life and then inviting yourself into a different mindset, a whole different part of your brain, really helps.
I love the idea of thinking of creativity as an act of devotion. That's just really cool. And especially, you know, as a fellow Suzuki parent, like watching my kid, there are so many emotions that come through from, you know, being like a little artist at their age. And so this idea of just kind of playfulness and finding that creativity regularly. I really love that idea. Meredith, thank you so much. Well, okay. So for all of us that are getting ready to look for your book, and for people that want to follow you on your podcast and your social media, what are the best ways to get a hold of you and to find all of your content?
Awesome. So the book will be available for pre-order very soon. And so I don't know when this podcast will go live, but it is already sort of available for pre-order, so in some websites. So you'll be able to find it if you just search The Artist's Joy in Google, The Artist's Joy book, you will find it. I would love it if you would pre-order. Pre-orders actually make a huge difference for authors, because it determines how many copies the publisher prints. And so that would be really amazing if you would pre-order the book. And I hang out a lot on Instagram, as you mentioned. I'm at Artists for Joy. We'll put that link in the show notes. Come say hi over there. Every author loves it when you join their email list, because that is the way you get another book deal, is to show like, look how many people I have on my email list. And so artistsforjoy.org is the website where you can learn more about creativity coaching, one-on-one. I do workshops, I do performances, I do speaking gigs, and you can join my email list right there. There's a banner right on the top of my website where you can join my list.
That's amazing. Well, I will put that in the show notes. And this has just been so cool. And also a side note for all of you, Meredith and I were both in SAI together, by the way. And Meredith knew before I knew that I was going to marry my husband. One of the funniest things. Okay, I'll never forget. One day I came to an SAI meeting and Meredith was like, wait, are you going to be the future Mrs. Alan Ammerman? And I said, I am. And I just knew it right then. It was so funny. So that's one of my favorite, like, narrative, you know, little stories. And Alan, my husband too, that was just really cool. But also even in college, Meredith, you were just such a high achiever, and you were such an inspiration even back then as an undergrad. So it's been really wonderful to follow you.
Aw, thanks. One of my very first Facebook pictures is with you.
No way. Are you serious?
You know, like, Facebook was just, and this, again, this is going to date us, but Facebook was like just the beginning. It was just coming out. Remember when we were in undergrad? And there we are in our little SAI red, like, posing for the camera. So I'm going to pull it up and find it for you and send it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Please send it to me. Well, love and roses to all the SAI girls out there and all the Alpha guys out there, our brothers. I still have such a big place in my heart for all of you. And Meredith, it's been so good to catch up. So I'm thrilled about this. And everyone that's listening today, thank you so much for dropping in and taking a listen. Please check out Meredith's book. I just know it's going to be amazing. And I want to send a huge shout out to those of you that have been leaving us a review. Every star counts, and it really helps as people leave reviews for others to find the show. We hope that this week you will be able to sprinkle a little stardust on all of your students, uncover the greatness within a few more young humans, and send those stars through the stratosphere. Happy musicking. Bye.